Welcome to the weekend in this edition of the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick. Catch up with me and our podcast of the show at BillMick.com. This weekend on the Roundtable, we're going to take a look at space. Of course, our space coast, where I'm headquartered, is the gateway to space for this country. And we've got a lot of news in space to cover this weekend. NASA's headquarters consolidation is in play. How will the Trump-Musk spat impact space and where we go from here? Our reliance on SpaceX and Dragon capsules. And what about going to Mars? Other space industry here in the state. Decommissioning the International Space Station. Replacement space stations. Are we going to the moon? Mars and beyond. Veteran space reporter Jim Banky is with us as we look at space this weekend on the Florida Roundtable from the News Florida News Network. We continue in moments.
Splish, splash, I'm taking up.
Everything okay in here?
Oh, yeah, sure is.
You're wearing a life jacket.
Sure am.
In the tub?
Practicing for when we head to the lake. I read about wearing one at wearitflorida.com.
And wearitflorida.com told you to wear it in the tub?
Nope, that was my idea. You know, Florida is the leader in boating fatalities, so a life jacket can save lives.
As you were.
Splish, splash, I was taking a
Learn more at wearitflorida.com.
Summer starts early here in Florida, which means we get more beach time, more sunshine, and more time to enjoy refreshing, sweet, and juicy fresh from Florida watermelon. The best part of summer is already here. Find locally grown Florida watermelon where you shop. Just look for the sunny Fresh from Florida logo or ask for it by name. Fresh from Florida. There's sunshine in every bite.
Spring is here and it's the perfect time to plant olive trees. At Quality Grain Specialists in DeLand, Florida, we've got over 7 fruiting olive tree varieties ready to thrive in your garden now. Browse online at qualitygrainspecialists.com or visit us at 335 West Michigan Avenue in DeLand. Whether you're a seasoned grower or just getting started, our expert team is here to help you grow. Top quality plants, sustainable gardening products, friendly expert advice. qualitygrainspecialists.com.
Living with a body of water right outside your home sounds delightful, until these boogers start showing up. Mosquitoes aren't just annoying. They can carry deadly diseases like Zika and West Nile virus. But with Summit Mosquito Dunks, you can have your pond without all the worry. Simply drop a Summit Mosquito Dunk into standing water and kill mosquito larvae for 30 days or longer. Mosquito Dunks are harmless to people, pets, fish, and wildlife. So it's just that stop hanging around. Visit SummitResponsibleSolutions.com.
Glad you're with us this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick. Our guest, veteran space reporter Jim Banky, as we talk the gateway to space, which is Florida, specifically the Space Coast, where Jim and I are located. Jim, thanks for taking the time. Good to have you with us this weekend.
Great to be back on your show today, Bill.
Hey, we've got a lot of things. Always for us, because we live here, always
right.
Lots of things going on
so
in space.
So busy.
But one of the things that really got my attention, has the attention of many people here, is the idea of consolidating NASA's headquarters right now, spread all across the country, Doge and President Trump trying to minimize government and be efficient about it. Are we looking at a potential NASA headquarters being here on the Space Coast in the state of Florida?
Well, I think you got to look at what it means to be NASA headquarters. So I think a lot of people have this vision of the building in Washington, D.C. On E Street being closed down, shut down, mothballed, rented out to somebody else, and then everybody moves somewhere. You know, we bring the administrator down here, the deputy administrator, the whole kit and caboodle to Florida or competing with Marshall Houston. Space Flight Center in Huntsville or Houston as a natural spot with Senator Cruz wanting to have everything there. That's not what's going to happen, in my opinion, okay? What's going to happen is, and even by law, a federal agency has to have a presence in the D.C. metro area, okay? And just
that's
just,
when I go to Mailbox Plus if I'm Trump,
right? Right, and it just makes sense that in Washington, you'd want to have your administrator and the top managers. You'd want to have somebody, you know, with your Office of International Affairs, because that's where all the embassies are. You want to have somebody with intergovernmental affairs, because, you know, NASA works with NOAA and the DOD and all these other agencies, the FAA. You probably want to have minimal support staff, you know, for your safety and your communications, some of those things. So what do you do with the rest of the people who run the different programs and projects within the different mission directorates?
Mm-hmm.
Aeronautics mission directorate, space, human space exploration, space technology. There's all these different mission directorates that have their senior managers in Washington. And so I think what the idea is that you're going to move some of those people or those functions out of Washington to other areas, not only to reduce the footprint in D.C., which is the goal in terms of budget and all that, but also move some of these managers closer to where the decisions that they make hit the road. So you'd put your human spaceflight people maybe in Houston or maybe down here at Kennedy Space Center. You know, you'd put your science people wherever science is done at all the different
and aeronautics
people.
There's so many of them.
You know, there's all these field centers around the country doing different things. So I don't think you're going to see the total closure of headquarters and then it all moved. I think you're going to see a small headquarters presence remain in Washington, and then it's just a matter of where do all the other people go. And I think that's not known. That's not been decided. And so I think it's still fair game for some of our leaders to be going after that kind of activity.
So you're still going to see a disjointed presence, but some consolidation happening.
Yeah, and if you look at the history of NASA and the way it's been organized through the years, there's been this ping pong kind of back and forth of do you put everybody at headquarters and the centers do the work, or do you put everybody at the centers and they do the work and do it all there? And you'll see that major historical events through the years, for good or for bad, have affected the way NASA's been organized or has reorganized itself. And so I think as they talk about moving headquarters, it just means that they're, you know, looking at the organizational chart and saying, well, which way works best and where do we put everybody to meet the needs of our budget and our mission, most importantly, mm-hmm. going forward.
Any idea of a timeline on when a decision like that will be made, or will it take some action in Congress to make it happen too?
I don't know the answer to that. I think that there certainly seems to be a push to get things going yet this fiscal year, and then maybe have decisions in place, you know, by the end of September, which is the end of the fiscal year, and move on to the next year. We don't have a NASA administrator yet, so whoever that turns out to be, it's going to have to make decisions. It's going to make all this happen.
Fantastic. Jim Behnke is with us. He's been covering space his entire career, and he's sharing that expertise with us today here on the Florida Roundtable. A lot of ground, or I guess I should say space, to cover, and we do it this weekend on the Roundtable.
Who did you let down today? Your wife? Your kids? Well, how about yourself? Take a look in the mirror. If you're tired of your drug and alcohol problem, you need to fix the problem, and right now, before you hurt or kill yourself, or worse yet, somebody else. Call the addiction specialist now at the Reset Addiction Treatment Helpline. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We'll find you the right treatment regardless of your financial situation. When you call right now, you'll speak to a recovering addict who understands what you're going through right now. Let us help you break your addiction to drug and alcohol before it's too late. This call is completely confidential and free. So take 5 minutes of your time and call us right now. We're here answering the phone. I promise it'll change your life.
Call 800-853-0975. That's 800-853-0975. 800-853-0975. Again, 800-853-0975.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, Emmy Award-winning actor, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision, especially when you're galloping side saddle down a countryside road on a horse named Archibello, who seems to have only one speed, high. And pulling on his reins only seems to encourage him to go even faster. So, of course, my body hurts and my joints ache, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life. Oh, Archibello!
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
As soon as this scene wraps, I'm going to kiss the ground, thank Archibello for his outstanding performance, feed him a carrot, and visit brainhealth.gov.
Find out how you can make the most of your brain as you age at brainhealth.gov.
Back with Jim Banky this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick. Thank you for spending your time with us here on the Florida News Network as we talk about Florida being the gateway to space and things going on thereabouts. Jim, before we get into space, let's talk about commercial air flight for a minute, because there are some things changing there. And you were telling me about commercial supersonic flights that Concorde used to do it from here to Europe or the West Coast to Asia or whatever, but there's a change coming.
There's a change coming, and we'll tie this right back to NASA, because the first day in NASA is aeronautics.
Right.
And so NASA has been studying supersonic flight. They were, you know, going back to the NACA days, National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, way back, you know, led to the X-1 and Chuck Yeager's first flight breaking the sound barrier. The big joke is Chuck Yeager and the X-1 broke the sound barrier, and now NASA's new X-59 airplane, which is probably going to fly sometime yet this summer, we hope, is going to fix the sound barrier. But in the meantime, President Trump signed an executive order this week that directs the Federal Aviation Administration to lift the ban on commercial supersonic flight over land. That was the ban put in place back in the early 1970s, because people wanted to fly supersonic faster than the speed of sound. They wanted to fly from L.A. to New York in 2 hours or whatever it takes, hour and a half. But it makes sonic booms, and the sonic booms would hit the ground and break the windows and scare the cows. And next thing you know, there's a call for it to ban supersonic flight. So that ban went into place. It was based on the speed of sound. It was based on the fact that if you fly faster than the speed of sound, you generate this sonic boom.
Okay.
Well, now, what if you can fly faster than the speed of sound but not make a sonic boom that's going to bother anybody? What's been called by NASA a sonic thump, which is what the X-59 is going to fly to prove that it can do, and then see what the public thinks about that noise. Well, then, if you can make the rule noise-based instead of speed-based, you could lift this ban and make supersonic flight possible all over the country, not just over the water like Concorde used to do,
right,
but actually over land. So you could fly, you could do, as I like to say, you could do Disney World in the morning in Orlando and do rope drop and have a nice breakfast and see a couple shows, maybe a parade, then hop on an airplane at Orlando, fly to Los Angeles and Anaheim and do supper and fireworks at Disneyland in the evening, you know, same day.
And Disney would probably have their own supersonic jet to make that trip possible.
They might. You know, it'll all be VIP and, you know, and all that. We granted that that's going to be the case initially. The Universal could be the same. Or in space terms, you could see the Space Shuttle Atlantis at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex in the morning and see the Space Shuttle Endeavor at the Los Angeles Science Museum, the new exhibit they're building out there for showcasing the Shuttle Endeavor, all on the same day. Pretty cool. So
it does change the dynamics of travel.
It does. It would. And there's all sorts of applications in so many different areas. And yes, it will start out for business travelers and the more well-to-do. But like the history of aviation, throughout the history of aviation, more and more people will get to fly as the costs reduce and you have these efficiencies built in. So President Trump asked the FAA to lift the ban in 180 days and then directed the FAA to come up with the noise standards that the industry can follow going forward. This is a huge deal in aviation. This is a huge deal in aeronautics. NASA's been on the forefront of all this from the very beginning. It's going to continue to be on the forefront of all this. And it's an exciting time.
So they have defeated the sonic boom then, and they're just going to demonstrate it now.
They're going to demonstrate it now. They're going to demonstrate it with an airplane. It's not a production airplane. It's not what the airliner would look like, but it's the technology and the way you can shape the aircraft to change the way the shock waves come off the airplane and not become a sonic boom.
Wow.
I've heard the sound simulated, and it truly is nothing more than maybe the sound of a car door slamming in your neighbor's driveway as you sit outside your front door.
Okay.
That's not the big booms like we experience here, like, for example, when a Falcon 9 comes back and lands, or when the shuttle used to come back here.
Sure.
Yeah. And you get that boom, boom, you know, and it shakes everybody and rattles everybody. Not going to happen in the future.
If this happens, how long before commercially available? Another decade, maybe?
I think 2030s is a fair estimate before it really becomes widespread. And it's just such an important, because it shows that in terms of the state of Florida, you know, we talk about space all the time, but we really sometimes should use the word aerospace, because there is as much going on in the aeronautics world developing in the state of Florida as there is in the space program. And they're complementary because they draw the same type of expertise and the one support. It's very synergistic. Synergistic? Is that what it is?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, I'm a writer. I know words. You know, here in Melbourne, where we're at right now, you know, every time I drive by the Melbourne International Airport, it's like there's another giant new hangar being built.
Right.
I saw another hangar, you know, go up, and they put the sign up, and I didn't know that the Falcon jet's going to have a home here, which is kind of interesting that it's another Falcon on the Space Coast,
right.
You know?
Sure.
But that keeps happening. That keeps growing. And again, it supports space and space supports aviation. And really, as commercial space gets even crazier busy, you know, we've seen some of the ways that it affects air travel in terms of traffic control when there's a launch and the restricted areas and all that.
Sure.
We're going to have to solve the problem of rockets and airplanes getting along better than maybe they're getting along now.
And in the case here at the Cape, cruise ships being a part of that equation.
Sure. Yeah. And that's just going to get busier and busier. And when you can bring in aviation, when you can bring in people faster to the area, it's just yet another draw that allows those passengers to get on their cruise ships. And as you get more and more launches, there's nothing more... I don't know if it's nothing is the right word, but I'm telling you, for people I've talked to who have been on cruises and they're pulling out of Port Canaveral right at the time of a launch, you can't get a better view.
I can imagine.
You know?
Yeah. And I'm a fan of taking cruises, too. I'm going to have to schedule my next one when I know there's a launch when we're leaving port.
Oh, no, Bill. You never schedule anything during a launch, okay, because you'll be disappointed. Schedule it for when there is not a launch scheduled. And your chances of seeing a launch will be much improved.
Yeah, because it'll be postponed the day before.
Exactly.
And then go, yeah, that's
exactly.
True.
Never.
Well, now that you've got us there, I wasn't going to hit this till later in the show, but let's go ahead since we're there. Rick Neal from Florida Today and their space team there, and they cover space extensively, where you started your career, as I recall.
I was there many, many years ago.
He wrote a piece this week that says, it looks like we're going to start developing offshore launch pads. We've been landing Falcon 9 rockets on ships in the ocean for years now with Elon Musk and SpaceX.
Right.
Looks like there are companies that want to launch from out there because of the congestion and all the expansion of launches at the Space Center.
Yeah, there's only so much property at the Cape to keep building new launch pads, and then they have to be scheduled and they have to be coordinated. So you have to have your turn to fly. Mm-hmm. And as things get busier, It's going back to the aviation analogy, it's almost like slots at an airport. You know, there's only so many planes that can land and take off in a given amount of time. The rockets are going to be the same way. Now, launching on platforms out on the sea is not a new thing. And in fact, Sea Launch used to do it all the time way back when. Literally take a rocket on a ship out to the equator and launch it. Take advantage of the Earth's rotation. If you're in the middle of the water, you can fly any direction. You're not limited by flying over land. There's all sorts of benefits to doing this.
So added safety factor.
And if there's added safety, you're much further away from the public. You know, it's the whole thing is attractive to the industry. Now, of course, there's drawbacks in that you have to prepare your rocket and then ship it out. It's not the same thing as just driving it to the pad, you know, from work or from your home and, you know, in Cocoa Beach.
Yeah.
You got to get on a ship and go out there for a week or two and do all that. But that's a minor thing when you consider the advantages. And the column is correct in saying that we're busy here. It's going to get busier. And as companies want to fly and have more control over when they fly, they're going to need alternatives. And you still have to launch as close to the equator as you want, because anytime you get further away from the equator, there's a penalty in the amount of weight you can carry indoor, but it all has to do with orbital mechanics, which I'm not going to get into because I don't know if, you know, you need adult beverages
be
to
way
truly
above
understand
my
it.
Head.
Yes,
yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Now,
would these be static launch pads or would they be ship based or what?
I think they could be both. I think you could have a ship Well, you could have a ship like Sea Launch was that could carry the rocket. Well, actually, didn't actually carry the rocket. Another ship carried the rocket out to the boat. They went out together and then transferred the rocket to the boat that launched the thing, and then the both ships came back. But you could do an oil platform, an oil rig type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
You'd still have to tow the ship, the rocket, out of there, out to the rig, and transfer it, erect it, fuel it, and fire. There are also ideas that go way back to launching the rocket from the water itself. You literally put the rocket into the water. It goes vertical, floating, bobbing there in the water. You fill it up with fuel, and you launch it out of the water.
Now, well, the aliens have been doing it for years, Jim, according to people I talked to.
And so have our nuclear missiles launching from submarines. So
sure.
That's not a thing to be overcome. It's another great idea as to how to do it.
And the innovation, and as technology grows and moves forward, it's like there are no bounds to the innovation here.
No, and I've seen that working, like especially in that, we keep talking about NASA aeronautics, the convergence of technologies, where, for example, and again, this is going to be an aviation example, but batteries. Okay, we've never at NASA aeronautics or in the industry ever worried about batteries before. That's what does your flashlights, that's what does whatever, your cell phones. Now batteries can power airplanes.
Yeah.
You know, and not only small airplanes, but big airplanes, big airline airplanes. So now as this battery industry gets smarter and better and more efficient, now there are uses for these batteries in other industries. And so the example applies in so many other areas where you can have these technologies converge and make possible these innovations that no one dreamed of even 20 or 30 years ago in the space business.
That is interesting. About a minute left here. How did DOGE impact the mindset, anyway, of the space industry?
Okay, the mindset is a lot different than the actual results. The mindset was...
Well, a lot of overreaction anytime things are said,
right? There's overreaction and what people... But it's more of a morale thing.
Okay.
People are scared. People are nervous. People are worried. People don't understand it. People don't respect the people doing it. I mean, these are what I'm hearing. It's been very disruptive within the space program to have these people, these outsiders looking in.
Mm-hmm. So what's the reality as opposed to that perspective?
Then? Well, and then the reality is just meeting the needs and from day to day. What's the next thing they're asking for? And then react and do your best to make sure that you're meeting the needs. And yet again, within NASA, focusing on the mission. The mission has to be accomplished.
And Jim Behnke is with us this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. We continue in moments right here.
This boating season, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission wants to remind you to wear your life jacket. You make a difference in the life of your family. As a parent, it's your job to keep your kids safe and be there for them. You do it at home, at school, and you need to do it on the water as well. Always wear your life jacket and have your children wear theirs too. It's a basic step that saves lives. Life jackets save lives. Wear it, Florida. Visit myfwc.com for more information. That's myfwc.com.
There's a price war in the insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call the Term Lifeline right now and see if you can save 40%. $500,000 plans and up, that's our specialty. Even great smokers rates. Protect your family today. Call the Term Lifeline right now for a free quote. 866-558-TERM, 866-558-TERM, 866-558-TERM.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Growing up with a brother with autism, Sarah Cronk witnessed firsthand how kids with disabilities felt left out by their peers. It's why at the age of 15, Sarah approached her cheerleading coach with an idea to include girls with disabilities on her school's cheer team. Well, what started out as an inclusive high school cheer team in a small town in Iowa has led to what is now known as Sparkle Effect, a thriving nonprofit with over 180 cheer teams across the United States, bringing students with and without disabilities together through cheerleading. The result? More confidence, higher grades, and better school attendance for kids with disabilities. And for those without a disability, new friends and a greater empathy. You want to learn more? Well, visit disabilitycampaign.org, where we have posted a link to to the fabulous work known as the Sparkle Effect.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late, we stay informed, we invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Imagine. Imagine being denied an apartment because of your religion, or your race, or because you have children, or a disability.
It's so wrong.
Yes, but who has the power to stop this?
You do. Each of us has the power. The law is on your side. It's illegal for landlords to discriminate because of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or familial status. If you suspect that you have experienced housing discrimination, file a complaint with HUD immediately so we can investigate it. Fair housing is your right.
Use it.
To learn more, visit hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Or call 1-800-669-9777. 1-800-669-9777. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Bill Mick with Jim Banky back with you on the Florida Roundtable as we talk Florida as the gateway to space. And Jim, let's try to get us into space here in the remainder of the show.
Yeah.
We had a little scare on that front this last week as the president and Elon Musk had a bit of a social media tiff. And one of the things that Elon Musk said was, okay, I'm going to decommission Dragon. We have become so reliant on the Falcon 9 and the Dragon capsule, taking everything up to the space station, taking people up and back. I didn't think it was a serious threat when it was made. Musk would be cutting his own throat and SpaceX's throat if he did that. What's the reality of what happened there?
Well, yeah. Is this a boys will be boys? I don't know. The bromance is dead. I mean, I read all sorts of fun headlines.
Oh, and the memes were terrific.
The memes were incredible that all day. Yeah, it scared everybody to death for about, what, an hour or so until Elon backed off and said, you know, nah, okay. Someone wrote something about, Elon, you just need to chill and step back for a couple of days. And then Elon says something to the effect of, yes, you're right. You know, Dragon will continue to fly.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then
it's been so reliable and well engineered. Yeah. I mean, I don't see walking away from it.
No, I think that was just one of those things that unfortunately in the world we're living in where these guys say these things and then the media goes absolutely crazy.
Overreacts every time.
It's all instant in your news. This is we could easily get into the dangers of social media and this monster we created in the internet, and I was responsible for a lot of that, at least in our own local space world way back in the 90s. Kind of regret some of that, actually. You know,
wow.
It's like okay, you sure we really wanted to go down this path, you know? But so everyone reacts to it, and then it wrecks your day. It just, you know, and if you're somebody that works at the Space Center, and your livelihood depends on the fact that this company comes in and launches all these rockets. You could be a SpaceX employee, or you could even be just a support worker or an NASA worker.
And you've got one or two kids about to go to college. Whoa. You're worried.
And Elon's not someone to just be ignored. The man,
true.
I don't necessarily want to say powerful, but he is a force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely.
Okay, and he has made.
And remarkable accomplishments along the way.
I was just going to say that. Within the space program, he has made some remarkable achievements. leading the team. I mean, I'm going to give credit to the SpaceX team and all the people that have come and gone since the whole thing started. There's a lot of turnover there. But yeah, I mean, again, we talk about a Falcon 9 landing in the ocean on a little postage-sized stamp, you know, barge coming in here to the port. And we laughed. We laughed at him when he first said it.
People, and he did it.
And people at the Cape, like, oh, man, this guy's crazy. And now there are, what, more than 425 launches of reflying a Falcon 1 or Falcon 9 first stage. So Elon, when Elon says something, it gets noticed. And so he says this about Dragon. Then he backs off a couple hours later. But in those few hours, basically all hell broke loose. And, you know, NASA was saying, we're going to continue our mission. That's been the theme through this whole thing. Elon backed off. Dragon is continuing to fly, will continue to fly with people on it, with cargo on it. And even a version of it will eventually be responsible for deorbiting the space station in another 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I want to get into we rely on Dragon. And, I mean, it's the only U.S. vehicle getting us to the space station
currently
performing those missions right now.
Right now, yes. And I still have confidence in Boeing. If they decide as a business case to continue doing Starliner, which we all know that story. I hope we all know that story with the astronauts remaining up there, not stranded, but remaining
up
there.
Could
have come back.
Utmost caution.
But yeah. And we talked about that the last time we were together on this show. But Dragon is the vehicle, and it's a great vehicle, and it'll continue to rely on it. And in a way, it reminds us that we still do need that second way to get into orbit that's not the Russians.
Are there innovations that go on to Dragon throughout its use? Do they adapt? Do they change? Are they redesigning or planning a next edition thereof?
Well, I've heard talk of a Dragon that could be designed that could go to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do that with this particular version. Clearly with Starship, that's the vehicle Elon is looking ahead to in terms of going to the moon and onto Mars eventually. So I don't actually think you'll ever see a Dragon leave Earth orbit.
Okay.
But do they innovate? No, I don't. If they do, there are minor improvements. I don't know specifically.
Computer technology, screen technology, whatever else, right?
Better LCD, better processor maybe, But to certify a vehicle to fly humans in space, you can't be messing around with the design every time you launch it.
Right.
You got to lock in the design, freeze the design. A lot of testing. And not mess with the good thing. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, is really what it comes down
to. Okay, that makes sense. What about other space industry that may get into competition for a commercial vehicle or for a space program vehicle, like going to the space station, but then the commercial side too, space tourism being a part of that.
Yeah. Well, Sierra Nevada has their Dream Chaser, which is going to hopefully fly soon. It's a small winged vehicle based on a lifting body design that NASA developed many years ago during the 60s. It was one of the contenders for the crew flights to the International Space Station. It was not selected when Dragon and Starliner were, but now I think NASA's been looking more and more at it. There's a lot of interest within the industry. It's a great-looking vehicle. It's supposed to fly on I'm going to blank out now, whether it's the Atlas V or the Vulcan, but the United Launch Alliance, a United Launch Alliance rocket.
Okay.
And so that's a possibility. Are there any others out there that want to carry humans? None that I'm really aware of. I mean, Blue Origin is out there doing its suborbital flights in Texas.
Right.
And their big New Glenn rocket, which is launched once already from the Cape, and another one coming up here this summer, it sounds like. I think they announced a no earlier than date in August. It's still mostly cargo at this point. I've not heard of them doing it. Now they've all got ideas. Blue Origin's got an idea for a lunar lander that NASA's funded as a backup to the SpaceX lunar lander.
Okay.
So they are involved in human spaceflight. I haven't heard of them developing anything that would launch from the ground, take humans into space. But once they're in space, take them to the moon. That's pretty cool. Blue Moon. I mean, what a perfect name for a vehicle, you know, to land people on the moon.
Comes with its own theme song already.
Already.
Yeah.
You know, so, but then there are a lot of other launchers, companies, smaller companies that are building out at the Cape, modifying launch pads, hoping to get into the game of launching satellites into Earth orbit. A lot of the small satellites, the Starlink, competitors to Starlink, for example,
right?
Amazon's Kuiper constellation. So we're seeing a lot of that happening. Space Florida has been very involved in developing that and bringing those folks here to the Cape. So lots of competition, lots of growth. And going back to the offshore stuff, all the more reason why you're looking for more ways to get more launches from the Cape, because you still want to stage from here. This is still the place to be. This is where the workers are. This is where the infrastructure is. This is where the transportation modes are between rail and air and sea and land, you know. We're the only quasi-modal, is that what the port says? You know, our quadrimodal site in the country for transportation ways to get into space.
Wow. So, well, you mentioned a moment ago the decommissioning of the space station, and that's closer than it is farther away.
Yes.
What's the plan for that, and what's that going to look like?
Boy, well, the plan is to launch a modified version of a Dragon capsule, go up. The thing is, will at some point be officially decommissioned, unmanned, put into a sort of a stasis mode. And then it will slowly descend naturally through friction in orbit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every once in a while we have to raise the orbit of the space station to keep it from falling into the ocean. And then at some point when the orbit hits the right moment, the Dragon will fire thrusters to break the vehicle, and it will enter the atmosphere. It will break up into many pieces. Much of it will burn up. Chunks of it will make it to the water. And they will
control it into the
ocean.
And
it's controlled the whole way so that it lands South Pacific, I think was the last I heard, where nobody is. I mean, there is a part of the ocean in the Pacific where there isn't anything, no land, no islands for like thousands of miles, and it's like the dumping ground for space.
Will they disassemble it at all beforehand?
No.
It's all going to be one big...
No, it'll all come one down. Now, there has been talk about the Russians wanting to detach their half of the space station and somehow continue to use it or reattach it to another module. I haven't heard whether or not that's really proceeded. That comes up in conversation every once in a while, but by and large, the idea is to dump the whole thing and then have new commercial providers build launch platforms, space station platforms to do work in low Earth orbit.
And we go there next when we continue in moments right here on the Florida Roundtable from the Florida News Network.
Boating restricted zones are an important part of ensuring safety on Florida's waterways. In idle speed, no wake zones, vessels must operate at a minimum speed that will maintain headway and steerage with no visible wake. In slow speed, minimum wake zones, vessels must operate fully off plane and a speed which is making little or no wake. In either zone, vessels should be completely settled in the water, regardless of speed. For more information on this and other safe boating topics, visit myfwc.com.
If you're a diabetic, we have great news. You can end the painful finger sticks with a new CGM. Plus, they may be covered by Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance. If you use insulin or have had hypoglycemic events, you may qualify. Call US Med now to learn more.
800-513-1652. 800-513-1652. 800-513-1652. That's 800-513-1652.
Up to 44% of veterans say reentry into civilian life was difficult. 20% say they experienced depression, and 6,000 vets complete suicide every year. You're not alone. At the Florida Veterans Support Line, over 300 veterans like you call every week for resources, referrals, and support. Connect with one of our veteran peers who has walked in your shoes and can help you take the next step. You're not alone. Call 1-844-MY-FL-VET or visit myflvet.com.
Fresh Florida watermelon. When they say don't play with your food, they're not talking about fresh Florida watermelon. Built for fun, this mouth-watering powerhouse is perfect for backyard barbecues. It's the snack table all-star that always brings its A-game, one delicious bite at a time. When it comes to picking your picnic lineup, select the summertime legend. Pick Florida Watermelon. To see what Florida Watermelon can do for you, visit freshfromflorida.com today.
Thanks for spending your time with us this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. Jim Banky is with us as we talk space, and a big part of what goes on in our neck of the woods and across the state, it has to do with the space industry. And Jim, we were talking about the International Space Station decommissioning. What are the replacement plans for platforms in orbit for us to continue the scientific and further space exploration missions?
Yeah, the low Earth orbit is continuing to look more and more like it wants to be the home for a whole new industry, commercial space industry. And so that means all those things that you're talking about, not only the scientific research to be host of science and tourism to some extent, but also industrial stuff. What can we make up there? Is there stuff we can make up there? Now, that's been the holy grail for years and years and years of, you know, what can you make in orbit that you can't make on the ground and do it cheaper? Excuse me. So as the International Space Station is brought down, what's going to replace that scientific research capability? Well, the NASA plan and the nation's plan, the policy is to allow commercial launchers, commercial providers, just like we've done with the launch vehicles, now let commercial people build their versions of a space station. It may not be as grand as the International Space Station, but small little modules that can house a few people at a time, that can be docked within a Dragon or a Dream Chaser or Starliner or who knows what in the future.
Right.
And that becomes what low Earth orbit looks like in the future. So not the big space station, but a lot of mini space stations developed, launched, operated by private industry for profit, one would hope.
Sure.
Certainly supported by government contracts, as it always will be. Whether it's NASA or NOAA or Science Foundation or National Institute for Health or
right.
or the DOD. I mean, who knows? There's all these possibilities.
Well, you mentioned a while ago when we were talking about competitors to SpaceX with small satellites for internet coverage or whatever
right.
it may be. Now we're talking about multiple space stations, and you've got other nations that are doing their own things. Do we get to a point where we worry about clutter?
Boy, that's a constant question, a constant concern. The two answers are yes and no.
Okay, thanks for that.
There you go. Yes, Earth orbit, low Earth orbit, and mid Earth orbit, all of Earth orbit, no matter what altitude really you're at, but certainly within a certain band of Earth orbit, is definitely messy. I mean, you go from one satellite in 1958 to thousands and thousands of objects that we can track and tens of thousands of pieces of stuff that we can't track.
Okay.
We don't even know where they're at. We just know they're up there. Some of the pictures that you'd see of debris in Earth orbit is just scary. It's just like this haze, this hive of bees surrounding, you know, a swarm around the planet. You think there's no way. And yet, on the other hand, do you know how vast space is,
right.
how much volume there is?
Yeah.
You know, you say, well, the United States is overcrowded. You know, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting this or that or whatnot.
Right.
But now go walk through the parks in Wyoming or Nevada or
sure.
all the desert. You're not even there for miles and miles and miles and miles. It's not unlike that situation where, yes, there's a lot of debris up there. It is a concern. We have to mitigate it. We have to control it. We have to do things where upper stages of rockets aren't blowing up after they're being used. They're being restarted and dumped into the water, which is the protocol for U.S. launches.
Mm-hmm.
The second stages that the SpaceX flies, all these stages, they come back to Earth. They come back into the water. They burn up in the atmosphere. But there's a lot of junk out there, and a little tiny pieces of paint moving at 17,500 miles an hour, 5 miles a second one way, and you're orbiting slightly different at 5 miles a second the other way, and the two hit. That's a lot of kinetic energy. You could wipe, and there have been satellites that have been wiped out by hitting debris, causing even more debris.
Right.
So it is absolutely a concern, and all you can do is try to keep it from growing. There are people that look at trying to literally vacuum up space.
Right.
You know, and there are ideas for that.
Sounds like something from the Jetsons.
You know, space vacuum sucks garbage. You know, I mean, it's just, I can see the headline.
We're about a minute away from having to pause for a moment. Are we going to make it back to the moon and when?
We're going to make it back to the moon. I firmly believe that we're going to, quote unquote, beat the Chinese back to the moon. If the current president and administration continues to fund NASA at levels that can do it, and if people like Senator Cruz with the bills he suggested get approved, I think the money will be there to support the Artemis missions that we'll need to get to the moon before anyone else.
Fantastic. We need to go back.
We have to go back.
Establish dominance. There we go.
Yep.
Jim Banky with us. Well, what about beyond the moon? We'll take you there when the roundtable continues in moments right here on the Florida News Network. Nice to have you along this weekend. It is Space in Florida.
Up to 44% of veterans say reentry into civilian life was difficult. 20% say they experienced depression, and 6,000 vets complete suicide every year. You're not alone. At the Florida Veterans Support Line, over 300 veterans like you call every week for resources, referrals, and support. Connect with one of our veteran peers who has walked in your shoes and can help you take the next step. You're not alone. Call 1-844-MY-FL-VET or visit myflvet.com.
Fresh Florida watermelon. When they say don't play with your food, they're not talking about fresh Florida watermelon. Built for fun, this mouth-watering powerhouse is perfect for backyard barbecues. It's the snack table all-star that always brings its A-game, one delicious bite at a time. When it comes to picking your picnic lineup, select the summertime legend. Pick Florida watermelon. To see what Florida watermelon can do for you, visit freshfromflorida.com today.
You work hard to provide a better life for your family. The only problem is that you now have a tax bill that you can't afford to pay. The IRS is now threatening to garnish your wages and put a levy on your bank account. You can't ignore the IRS. They won't go away on their own. You need help, and you need it now. Call the tax pros at United Tax Fix today. Call 800-762-2768. That's 800-762-2768.
Wearing a life jacket or personal flotation device is one of the most important decisions you can make while boating. Today, there are several types of life jackets available, so you can find one that's comfortable and convenient to wear no matter what you're doing. And thanks to incredible advances in inflatable technology and innovative materials development, safety and comfort can both be a priority. Stay safe, stay comfortable, wear it Florida. For more information on this and other safe boating topics, visit myfwc.com.
Shortness of breath, patient's confused, temp 102.
He just had an infection. What's going on?
He's becoming septic.
Antibiotics started. Bed ready, let's move him.
Infections can lead to a deadly chain reaction in your body called sepsis. Very quickly, sepsis can cause tissue damage, organ failure, and even death. If you know the risks, can spot the symptoms, and act fast, then you can get ahead of sepsis. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestrule.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Wrapping up the Florida Roundtable for this weekend, an interesting discussion on Florida as the gateway to space. And just where exactly is that taking us? Veteran space reporter Jim Banky has been with us for the hour. Jim, thanks again for the time. Appreciate your insights in all of this.
You bet. Always happy to chat with you.
So we are going to get back to the moon, yep. And we think we're going to do it before anybody else. What's the plan after that? Are we looking at establishing working colony on the moon or something like that? And will it be a place to move on to Mars or beyond later?
That's exactly right. So the moon is going to be a place where we want to establish a permanent presence. We want to learn to live and work on the moon. And as we do that, learn to test, learn to use the technologies we need to go to Mars and to live on Mars. We've been after Mars for a long time. It seems to always be another 30 years away. When I graduated from college nearly 40 years ago, I wanted to be Hugh Harris. Hugh Harris was the longtime NASA director of public affairs, the voice of shuttle launch control. I guarantee you, if you've watched anything about space and the shuttle in the early days, you've heard his voice.
Sure.
I wanted to be the Hugh Harris of the Kennedy Space Center on the day we launched the first humans to Mars. And now here we are 40 years later, and we're still 30 years away, and I'm probably going to be retired and done by then.
Living in the Bahamas, drinking fruity drinks, whatever you're doing.
Whatever you're serving, Bill.
Yeah.
You're serving.
That'll work.
It's going to happen. It's just we keep waiting. And so guys like me at our age, we're impatient for that, those of us who grew up with Apollo. But it's going to happen, and it's going to be great. And it's an inevitable evolution. It's an inevitable continuation of humans into the solar system and beyond. That is our, and this is the intangible feel good stuff, but that is the spirit of humanity. That is what we're all about as a species. And frankly, we have to do it if we're going to survive as a species. Now, you can talk about whether or not we're going to blow up the Earth or not in the meantime, but at some point in a billion years or so, maybe a little bit longer, that sun of ours is going to grow to the point where this planet's going to get so hot, it's going to incinerate the atmosphere, and then another few billion years, the sun's going to explode and we're toast.
Right.
That's so the sooner we get going, the better off we're going to be as a species.
I like it. Are we at a stage where our grandkids, or maybe their kids, are going to be looking and saying, hey, Mom, Dad, I'm going to go work on the moon for 6 months?
I remember whispering to my granddaughter when she was just a few weeks old, my first granddaughter, who's now 10, Evelyn, and saying, while I'm feeding her the bottle, so she reacted happily when I said this.
Sure.
She's like 2 months old. Honey, someday you're going to go to Titan, the moon of Saturn. You're going to be the first one to land on Titan. Mark my words. And I still believe that. I still believe that one of my grandchildren, my youngest, Axel, launched his first model rockets a few weeks ago, got interested in, finally have someone who's an offspring of mine show an interest in the space program. None of my boys ever did, because, you know, that's what Dad did, right?
Yeah, right, right.
So really to get back to the answer to the question is yes, our grandchildren are going to be the ones to really take full advantage of this new era in space transportation and space exploration. They are going to be the ones that do and fulfill these dreams that we've had growing up.
Amazing advances, and they're all centered right here in Florida. How cool is that?
That launch to Mars is going to happen right here a few miles away.
That is outstanding. Jim Banky, always an exciting hour when you're here. Thank you again for taking the time, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time.
See you again.
Enjoy your week. We'll see you next weekend right here on the Florida Roundtable from the Florida News Network. Keep your eyes on the skies, folks, because things are changing, and they're cool.
You've been listening to the Florida Roundtable with Bill Mick on News and Public Affairs presentation of the Florida News Network. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this station management, owners, or sponsors. For questions or concerns, contact Florida Roundtable at fnnonline.net.